Yeah, that's large.
Welcome, everyone. Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order here. I'll get it down in a minute. We're going to take our agenda in order today, and so we will start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2809. Welcome, Dave.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this bill offers an option for municipalities to convert an urban renewal plan from a standard property tax rate plan to a reduced property tax plan for consolidated billing rate purposes. By the way, consolidated billing rate is the sum of billing rates of all taxing districts. The difference between standard rate and reduced rate is that the standard rate plan includes property tax rates for general obligation bonds and local option levies approved by voters after October 6, 2001. And the reduced rate plan excludes such rates. So then this consolidated billing rate is multiplied by so-called excess value. That's how urban renewal plan gets money. What this bill does is it allows certain municipalities to convert an urban renewal plan from a standard rate to reduced rate for consolidated billing rate purposes. With the amendment 8-82, this bill will take effect on the 91st day following adjournment signed by when it passed the House. There was emergency clause. Now, Oregon Constitution doesn't allow emergency clause for laws regulating taxation and exemptions. So that was caught by legislative council, and we have an amendment to fix that.
Thank you. That pesky Constitution again. Okay, thank you for that. We have Representative Huffman here, and did you want to bring up Mr. Tashman with you? Or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Huffman, State Rep for District 59, and thank you for your time today. And we do have House Bill 2809 with the dash two amendments. That pesky dash one got in the way. And but anyway, dash two does clarify that. This is a bill that is strictly a fix for the Dalles and Lake Oswego. Those are the only two communities that this bill affects. And because of that, we have the support of the Urban Renewal Coalition. I didn't know there was one prior to today, but there really is. Doris Finwell tells me that it's cities, counties, and special districts, and they have another urban renewal bill that's a little broader in scope. And so we talked early on and didn't want to confuse the two since this was specific for the Dalles and Lake Oswego. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jeff Tashman, who is a consultant. Do you like to be called a consultant, or?
Yes, that's what I am.
Thank
you. Good. We always like it when people call themselves what they are. So if you could identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Tashman. I'm with Tashman Johnson, LLC, and I am an urban renewal consultant, and I'm currently working for the City of the Dalles on their downtown Columbia Gateway urban renewal plan. When the Dalles has a set of projects that have been in the plan from when it was adopted back in 1989, and they were affected more than almost any other community in the state by ballot measure 5. And then they were affected again by ballot measure 50, and the result was that for the whole decade of the 90s, they got almost no start on achieving the goals of their plan. And so they had a provision that stopped the tax increment financing process at the end of fiscal 2015. It's not enough time for them to finish what they want to do, and they met one-to-one with all of the taxing districts that would be affected by it, and they got consent of those taxing districts with the commitment that they would work to convert the plan from a standard rate plan into a reduced rate plan so that levies going forward and any levies, as Mr. Beck explained, any levies that were approved back in October 2001, they are completely unaffected by tax increment financing. They're exempted from tax increment financing. They, if it's a local option levy, they will get revenue on the growth inside the district right away. If it's a bond, the rate will be lower because it will include the growth inside the urban renewal area. So this is something that the Dalles is proposing, even though it reduces their revenue, because they are committed to working with the districts that are affected by it. The only thing I would add is that the plans that were adopted prior to December 1996, existing urban renewal plans, are almost entirely reduced rate plans. And then every plan that has been approved after October 2001 is a reduced rate plan. So this reduced rate plan really reflects the direction of the Department of Revenue and the legislature in terms of how urban renewal should work. And I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Why are Lake Oswego and the Dalles the only two cities affected?
What happened with them is they, when Measure 50 passed, the legislature was authorized to do some grandfathering benefits for districts that were in effect at the time, provided they amended the plan to include a maximum indebtedness or the maximum financial amount of the plan. And the Dalles and Lake Oswego both did that, but they had to do it by law, by non-emergency ordinance. Both ordinances got referred to the voters, and both ordinances were defeated at the poll. So they were the only two cities that were in existence before Measure 50 that didn't get the special grandfathering status.
Okay, so why did they, did all cities require a vote? Or?
No. It was only that the only reason that a vote occurred was that the law requires that this amendment be done by non-emergency ordinance, and those are always referable.
Oh, I see. So in these two places they were referred, and
that's
in other
right.
places they were not referred.
That's correct.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Okay. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to talk on this? I see enthusiastic shaking of no in the back of the room. So we will close the hearing on House Bill 2809 and open a work session on House Bill 2809. And Senator Morse, we have a dash two amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2809.
Senator Morse has moved the dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2809. Is there any discussion, objection? So ordered, Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2809 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2809 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Rosenbaum, would you like to carry this?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Okay. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2700.
Chair Buttig, members of the committee, House Bill 2700 clarifies procedures for late filing of property tax exemption by certain eligible entities and public bodies. And it creates a late filing procedure for first-time filers and public bodies with good and sufficient cause for late exemption filing. It takes effect on 91st day following adjournment sine die. There are actually late filing procedures already, but the occasions arose in a way that there were some churches where they moved to a different property, new property, and they assumed that their exemption status would continue didn't file in time, and they lost opportunity to late filing. And so what this bill does is that this is a global solution for those affected entities so that they can have one last final chance to file for exemption with, of course, some penalties.
Okay, was there something in the water that made a whole bunch of churches move all of a sudden, or?
Well, maybe we'll hear from
growth.
We'll hear from Mr. Phillips. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips with your Oregon Department of Revenue. And this issue came up last session, just about this same time. And apparently there were a couple of churches in the Marion County area, Representative Berger's district, that had this situation that Day's correctly described, and they had wanted some relief. So Representative Berger put in a bill. There wasn't time to work it, and then we talked during the interim, and we worked with Marion County Assessor's Office and the churches involved, and put together some a solution that she carried forward and submitted as this bill. The department's neutral on the bill, but I can explain to you in a little more detail what it does, and I don't know why they moved. That's a good question. But the exemption goes with the property, and so if you are going to apply for a property tax exemption, you have to apply for the property that you want exempt. And so that's why it didn't follow with them when they moved. It went through a number of iterations, but it came down to the point where there are basically three statutes that allow for someone to file for an exemption. And they have to do with different ownerships versus leasing versus public ownership and that kind of thing. And those three statutes are represented in sections 1, 2, and 3. There was a section 4 in the original bill with a retroactive piece, and I believe that was removed in the House Revenue Committee. So now we have that coming to you as with just three sections, as I recall. So essentially what the solution that Representative Berger landed on was that if you fail to file on April 1 for an exemption, and then you fail to file by December 31st, that's the late filing period, but you meet one of three conditions, then you get to file by the following April 1 again. So it gives you pretty much a full year if you meet one of the three conditions. The three conditions are, and they're listed in on my version. It's on section 2.
Good and sufficient cause.
Subsection 3, yes. Mm-hmm. If you're a first-time filer, and that's defined as someone who's filing for the very first time on that property. So if you're a church, in this case, let's say you're the Beth Shalom Temple here in Salem, and you move from Broadway down to South Salem, it's the first time you'd ever filed on that property. They may not ever file again in their entire history. They might file in 100 years from now. But most likely, whoever would file had never done it before. Because they're
on that property?
On that property.
So this pertains to anybody who files on the property?
Anybody who qualifies and files on that property. Yeah, if it's their first time ever filing on that property.
Okay.
Now, if they qualify in that first year... Oh, I'm sorry.
I do have a question for clarification in answering Senator Burdick. That can be any nonprofit,
qualifying nonprofit, 501c3. It doesn't have to be a church.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, the qualification for an exemption does not necessarily depend on whether you're 501c or nonprofit. That may be one of the qualifications, but it could even be a public entity.
Okay. I'm thinking of an example of somebody that had this issue. The descriptions you've given is churches, and the example is a church. But let's say you have a Boys and Girls Club that moves into a new building. Would they fit under this first time, et cetera?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, yes.
Okay.
Because they would have to file, if they're charitable and they meet all the other conditions, they would have to file under one of these three statutes.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. They'd have to be a first-time filer, and then good and sufficient cause, I see, is the next one.
Yes, and the third one is...
ownership.
Did not receive notice.
Had never received notice. That's part of the definition of first-time filer, yeah. Good and sufficient cause or first-time filer. And I thought there was a third one.
On line 30, ownership.
Yeah.
Legal and equitable title.
Okay. Thank you.
So what, just curiosity, so the church moves and they build a new church, I presume, or move into another building. What happens to the old property? Does the exemption go away, and how does that happen?
Madam Chair and Committee, the exemption, it becomes taxable the next year unless and until whoever owns the property or whoever is leasing the property and they are eligible for one of the statutory exemptions would qualify.
Okay, so it doesn't automatically just continue unless somebody discontinues it.
Correct.
Okay.
So if, for example, they leave the property on Broadway and, let's say, a public Department of Human Services opens a branch office, buys the building or leases the building and opens a branch office, they apply, then they would be exempt.
Okay. But if they didn't apply, then they would not be exempt.
If they're a public entity that mm-hmm. needs to apply, then they would have to in order to be exempt.
All right. Question, Senator Telfer.
Thank you. When you... under Section 2, regarding the notice, what notice are we talking about here, since property tax notification comes out prior to November, even? So,
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, the notice would be, and this really came out in the discussion with the county assessor, because most counties, when they know an entity is exempt, has been exempt, would be exempt, but for a timely filed application, they'll call them. You know, they'll call them or they'll send them a letter and say, you know, you guys missed the filing deadline. You might want to file before December 31st. So there'll be calls or letters in many cases, although it's not required by statute. Then the property tax statement goes out. And if they get a property tax statement and they ignore it, Representative Berger was concerned, I think, and I'm not speaking for her, but in the discussions it was, well, if you get a notice and you don't respond, then not only have you failed to comply with the statutory requirement to file, you've also ignored the notice. And, you know, at what point do we stop providing?
Senator Telfer,
follow up. What constitutes notice? Is it the property tax statement, or is it a notice from the county assessor saying, you know, you guys forgot to apply?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, it's not defined in the bill. Okay. It just says a notice. So something to clue you in. There is okay. No definition.
Okay. So basically, if they did, but you don't define the actual tax statement as a notice.
Madam Chair, the bill does not.
Yeah. Huh. And... So basically, this will. So they've already lost their tax exemption for a couple of years, I gather.
Madam Chair, the number of years that they've failed to file, right?
Right. So have they paid their taxes?
Madam Chair, the churches in particular that were the subject of the bill, I believe, paid the taxes.
Okay. Because yes. Do you think we need something in there that in order to qualify for the exemption in the year that they apply, if they, you know, apply late, if there are several years in arrears before they apply for that year, do you think we need a provision in here that they have to be up to date on their taxes in order to qualify?
Madam Chair, the department really doesn't have a position on that, whether they should pay when they don't fulfill the statutory requirements or whether they shouldn't or whether an exception should be granted. There was a Section 4 in the bill that would have allowed them to go back in time and the county would have had to issue refunds. Mm-hmm. But the Revenue Committee did not like that section.
So basically, without mentioning it, they would still be on the hook for the previous year's taxes if this goes through and they they file late, say, in 2015, but they've actually been assessed taxes. They were really slow, and they were assessed taxes in 2011 and 12 and 13 and 14. So they'd still have that as a liability. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, the and committee, that the normal process would be that they would miss the application period. They would get a tax statement. Mm-hmm. They would they may or may not be contacted by the county. They most likely would, but if they miss the extended filing period, then they would get another tax statement the next year, and then within a very short number of years, they'd get a notice of foreclosure, and there'd be several years after that. And it would go on through the normal collection process, and they would be fully aware before 10 years went by that they wouldn't actually be on the property anymore if they failed to pay any of the taxes.
Okay. But this doesn't excuse them from
not retroactive.
Earlier years. Is that was that your question?
No. Mm-hmm. But what I'm hearing is it's not retroactive. I had a different question.
Yeah, it's not retroactive. Go ahead.
I've had a lot of nonprofits not realize they could get a tax exemption. And so subsequent, and many times they're tenants. So the landlord applies for it, because I've been in this position with some buildings I own that I've leased them out to nonprofits, and I reduce the lease because I'm not having to pay property tax. So I apply for it. But other nonprofits don't realize this, and their landlord may not realize this. So maybe 2 years they've been in the property, and then all of a sudden they discover that, hey, you know, we can get a tax exemption for you, Mr. Landlord, and you won't have to charge us for the rent. So I understand it's not retroactive, but then they can come into the system in a subsequent year when the light bulb goes off or when they realize that it's just not retroactive.
And Chair, Senator Telfer, yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
What this bill does is just simply takes the existing late filing period and extends it from December 31st to April 1 if you meet one of those three criteria.
Okay. I'm just wondering how many people it will actually help. Okay, but they have to pay, you said they have to pay some penalties or interest or something if they do that.
The current late filing penalty is that if you miss the April 1 deadline, then you have to pay the greater of $200 or 0.1% of your market value. That's the current penalty in law. This would say that if you meet one of the three conditions, that you're a public entity, you're a first-time filer, you have good and sufficient cause, then you, I believe it says that you pay just the $200. So it keeps you, it kind of, I think it's a delicate balance between not taxing someone when it's the legislature's policy not to tax them, and yet recognizing that in order to administer the program, we need information. And so the balance is not to severely penalize somebody, but to still get the information. So the idea was that 0.1% could be a significant amount of money for, let's say it's a public entity. Last year, Lane Transit got into this situation, Willamette Lane Park and Rec. So there are certain entities that do end up in a situation where they fail to file, and then they just pay the $200, and that helps the assessor cover the cost of correcting the records. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so you're basically giving them a break from, because for the claim. Okay, so if they do a late filing on or before December 31st, they have the greater of 200 or 0.1% of the real market value. So what's the policy reason for cutting them a little bit of a break? Oh, actually, maybe it isn't a break because it's just a straight 200, okay?
Straight 200, yes.
Right. Okay.
This is Representative Berger's bill.
This is...
I don't see her.
It's just complicated. I've been in this situation numerous times by being a landlord of nonprofits,
yeah.
And this is very an interesting way about going around extending a filing deadline.
I mean, really,
why pay $200? I don't understand that if it's not retroactive.
Well, no, because they'd have to pay if they paid late. If they paid late anyway, they would have. If they paid late but not this late, they would have the penalty. So is this in addition to the penalty of not filing till December 31st, or it's just...
Madam Chair, no. It would not be in addition to.
Yeah, it's kind of puzzling, but I don't know that I would do it any differently. Go ahead.
But we're not talking about paying. We're talking about applying to be exempt from taxes. So if I have a nonprofit that says, oh, we didn't realize we could be tax-exempt in this building we're in, and so we're getting to you late now. No tax has not been paid. Why penalize them $200 for trying to get into the system now, effective July 1st through June for their tax year? I don't understand what the penalty's purpose is. It has nothing to do with payment. I mean, we're talking about filing for an exemption, not paying tax.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, the $200 is part of existing law. The other part is it's the greater of 200 or 0.1%. So the existing law has them paying paying that penalty for the privilege, I guess, or obligation or whichever, to file their exemption application after the due date. So that's the existing law. All this does is to say that if they meet one of these criteria, then they're not having to pay the greater of, they just pay the 200. So it's the existing law. Now, what's the purpose of the penalty? I mean, I think the beauty of having everything before you actually compute the tax roll and send out the tax statements is that everything's correct. The trouble with getting information after the fact is that it would have changed everybody's taxes potentially had you had it before, you know, on time. So let's say, for example, you've got a property in a district with a bond measure. Many properties in Oregon, most have bond measures, school bonds, county bonds, city bonds. That's calculated based on value. So if there's value that's taxable, then that's calculated into determining how much everybody else pays for that bond. But if it's exempt, then everybody else really should pay more in order to raise the correct amount for the bond measure or local option measure. So it throws everything off a bit to the extent that there are errors or exceptions or mistakes or inadvertent non-filings. All of that's done after the tax rolls turn.
That's why, to compensate for the extra work they have to do. I can understand that. Why would I assume that we took out the greater of language because it is more time, and so they would tend to have higher fees.
Madam Chair, I can only speculate that the Representative Berger was concerned that these entities that would otherwise qualify having to pay 0.1% of their market value was severely punitive. But I really can't speak for her.
Because other properties that apply by December 31st have to pay that higher amount.
That's true.
So why would the people who are even later get a break? Is anybody else concerned about that?
Number of things I'm concerned about. That would be
I think we're going to hang on to this bill for just a day or two. Okay. Thank you very much. You did very well. For a neutral position, I think you know.
Thank you, Madam.
Yeoman's work. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to talk on this? All right. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2700. Committee, we have our revenue forecast on Friday, and we have been invited to join the House Revenue Committee in this room at 8 o'clock on Friday morning. So I hope we'll all be there to hear the forecast straight out of the chute. We may not have smiles on our face at the end, but I guess we might as well know what we're dealing with. So thank you very much. We are adjourned.